teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At the Turn. Nick and Joe with you. I got fit for a driver and broke it while doing it. Why do people care about taking big divots so much? And a very mad golfer of the week at a very expensive golf course. Nick, before we started recording, you made the point of saying that you apologize because, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What did you say?
Well, we haven't had the turn first in this podcast. I am coming on the air and apologizing for my audio quality. I think it's well documented. I just had a long distance move. Mm. My podcasting microphone is in one of we have 12 large plastic tubs that we haven't even touched. We're at the point of the move where we've unpacked everything we need. And these tubs are just going to sit in the corner until there's these random, I don't know when. There's no reason to even open them.
When the kids are in college.
Yeah, exactly. And my podcast microphone is in one of those tubs. All of our stuff just got delivered yesterday, the rest of the stuff. So anywho, this is just a long way of saying I am going to make the effort to dig through these tubs and unroll all of the clothes because I know my podcast microphone is wrapped up in five pairs of sweatpants somewhere in some random thing. But for you, the listener, I will make that effort. I know I sound awful, and I am apologizing for my audio quality. This may be the last time I ever do this. It's definitely the first. But rather than making you apologize for me again this week, Joe, I'll take the lead on this one.
Well, I can already predict what's going to happen. You're going to listen back to this episode and say to yourself, actually, I don't sound that bad on this intermediate setup that I have. Nick has switched from, I guess, a Bluetooth headset from 2004 to now something post, well, I should say pre-AirPods, but the microphone does sound actually pretty good, which I think is a detriment to you prioritizing getting a podcast microphone. But You making a declaration that audio matters on a podcast to me and the fans, that just makes me feel good. And it's just all gravy from here as far as I'm concerned. And look, we're both evolving because a through line of this episode is both of us admitting things that we thought were, admitting that we're wrong in changing our stances on things that we really dug in our heels about. Me about moving into the 21st century with golf data, getting fit for my driver. We'll get to that in a little bit. Please rate and review At the Turn. For some reason, the reviews help. I'm not really sure why, but go ahead and hit that 5 stars. Leave us a review. Let us know, does Nick's microphone this week sound good enough?
Just let me know if it's good enough. If I even need to dig through these tubs. How urgent is that of a task? Because I got a lot of things going on. If it's not a big deal, I'll just put it off. But if it's really bad, I'll try to find it.
Just tell him the audio quality sucks, people, because we need him to get that microphone for my peace of mind. But give us 5 stars on either Spotify or Apple. We really do appreciate it. First thing before we get to my driver, I guess this is going to be, not a weekly segment because they don't play every week, but Anthony Kim played another professional golf tournament and it was looking bad once again. And by God, he shot five under in his final round. He made some birdies, did not finish DFL for the second tournament in a row. He finished 50th out of 55 guys. That's good enough for 50 grand on the live tour. So
bad.
Good for him. He can feed his family for another night. And I think this is signs of progress. I did still see the same narrative of, oh, AK proving the doubters wrong. This is going to make the haters mad. Once again, just to reiterate, no one's mad at Anthony Kim. We're all very excited he's given it a go in professional golf. We're all on his side. His Q rating is 100% right now. The only thing you can take umbrage with is him being on live, but if you parse that out, we're all very excited he's back.
The thing I'm sick of is everybody like posting screenshots of him like during an interview where he's like blinking or doing something weird, and they're like, look how bad AK looks. Like, what has he been doing for the last 12 years? It's like, all right, you know, he was known to be a partier. It's been 12 years since we've seen him. Like, stop.
A lot of free time.
Stop flipping into his looks. Like, who cares? He's not an actor. He's a golfer.
And you know what's been happening? The natural decay of the human body, which has all occurred for us the last 12 years. So.
Everybody who posts something about AK's looks should be forced to post a picture of themselves 12 years ago.
That sounds hilarious. Okay, Nick, I got fit for a driver on Saturday. I went to Club Champion at the recommendation of you and Romy. No free ads, but that is where I went. It is a place with master fitters. And for a nominal fee, you can get your entire bag fit, your putter, your driver, your wedges, whatever you want to do. I needed a new driver because I did something very dumb with mine. And frankly, I hit the ball too high. So I went in there. Basically, the process is you warm up, you hit some golf balls, then they watch you hit your driver. They get some data on you hitting your driver, and then they match you with a shaft first. We're not worried about the head. We're just going to switch in some shafts. So I swung a bunch. Tried to pace myself. I even woke up early and worked out to try to get the body right. Knew when I was going to swing a lot. And so we found a shaft. And guess what? After doing a lot of work, we arrived at the shaft that was already in my driver. So
that's good.
I'm going to get to that in a little bit. So I get the new shaft, and then we started to put some heads on there. I'm really excited to try all the latest and greatest. You fill out a form when you're setting up your fitting of what brands you're most interested in. I just clicked a couple because, frankly, you tell me what brands I should be interested in. I don't know. So I clicked Titleist, Callaway, TaylorMade. I swung the big boys. Very disappointed in TaylorMade's. Like, I played a burner for a long time, but whatever they gave me was, frankly, a piece of shit as far as I was concerned. I'm not going to buy that thing. They gave me
TaylorMade's kind of in a rough spell with their drivers. They had the Stealth 2 came out, and then all the faces started cracking. Like, you saw these pictures on Instagram of like the faces busted out. And then Rory goes in front of a PGA Tour press conference. Is like, I wish I didn't have to use this new TaylorMade driver. Like, I wish I could use the old one, but contractually I can't anymore. And he was so like, he's shitting on his own sponsor. You know, and now you coming on this podcast and shitting on them too. So it's a rough go for TaylorMade. I think they will get it figured out, because before like this Stealth debacle, they had been at the top of the driver game for a while. So, sorry, just a brief interjection on
TaylorMade. No, you make a good point. When two of the most prolific drivers of the golf ball, Roy McIlroy and Joe Simons, don't like a specific brand, you know, there's some issues.
I thought you were gonna go with Dustin Johnson there after Rory, but you know, you make a good point.
I did use a TaylorMade burner that I bought from Costco in like 2005 for 15 years. They used it from 05 to 2020, and I didn't really even want to get rid of it, but I was bored with during COVID, and I got a new driver. That was basically out of the way. I had no reason to get rid of it. It was a fantastic club. So I tried the TaylorMade, didn't like it. Then they put a Ping in my hands. I've never liked Ping golf clubs. I've maybe used a putter like for a couple years when I was in high school, but never liked their irons, never liked their drivers. Whatever they gave me, Romy told me, what was like the 430?
The 430.
Yeah, sure. The 430. I was shocked how much I liked that club. I hit it well. It set up well. I really enjoyed it.
I'm shocked. It's just, you should have known you were going to like that club. Like, Ping has a very distinct reputation for making the most forgiving, longest, like just the best, like they're the Toyota of
that's great
golf equipment. Like, they're so reliable. Yeah. They're so good. You can put one in the bag and just know that you've got a great product. So I'm very surprised you don't like them. I'm surprised you were surprised at how much you did like it. They just make, and like even My Golf Spy puts this out on Twitter like once a month. It's like more golfers would benefit from having a ping in their bag than any other driver. So anyways, a brief interjection on ping.
No.
Don't be surprised how good they are. They're really good. Marty Jurtson, for crying out loud, our boy makes these things.
Well, it's so funny because for some reason I've had this stigma against ping from a very young age in my golfing career. I can't really attribute it to anything. They've always sort of been a top 3, 4, 5 brand in the game. Like they've always been up there with Titleist in the recent golf era. Yeah, for some reason I've never really enjoyed their products. I hit the hell out of this thing, but I did not hit it as good as the new model of the club I already have. So basically, I spent an hour and a half, $175, to find that what I actually want is my golf club with a newer model head that's slightly smaller. So it's not the regular sized head. It's like the...
So the regular size, just for everybody else out there, is 460 cc's. That's what, like...
That's the standard.
98% of the drivers you buy are 460. Now there are the like low spin, which is I'm guessing what you have, the like players drivers, which are 445 cc. I'm guessing that's what you're talking about, just it's slightly smaller
footprint. The TSR3, yeah. Instead of the TS3, it's the TSR3 from Titleist. So I have the 3 right now of the 2020 version. So basically all I did was same shaft, different version of a Titleist head in there. The degree loft is a little bit different, and it was amazing. As soon as I lined up to the ball, I knew I was going to hit it, and the first one was a big smash. Like it was the farthest, the best ball flight that I had the entire day, and I'm like, this is great. Let me hit a few more, and we can wrap this baby up. I hit another one, and it felt weird and only went like 215, which was odd, and then I looked at the club, and holy shit, the shaft broke. And I turned around and looked at the guy and I was like, did I just buy this driver? And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I broke this. Like, what's the protocol? And he's like, dude, that's your club. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, we put that driver head on your shaft because we already knew that shaft was going to be good. You just broke your own shaft.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
That's
now
kind
what
of
do we
messed
do?
Up that they did that because they have every shaft with adapters to fit into any head. And like breakage happens because these clubs are just getting pounded and pounded and pounded. So like they should just be like, no big deal. Like we have 10 more. Like it's kind of messed up that they just made you break your own shaft.
So that was my thought originally. And then after I had like 10 minutes to like process what actually happened, my thought was, and I said this to him, I'm actually kind of glad this happened here rather than the third hole of my next round. Because if the shaft was wearing and it was going to break eventually anyway, which seems like it was the case, that's not like I struck the ball on the shaft and that's what led to it. He's like, your swing speed is such that your shafts are probably going to wear out at a certain point. And for some reason, it just happened to break right now. So it was going to break.
I wonder if it had anything to do with the incident that caused the head. Like, I wonder if that made
any valid
sort
point.
Of, you know, like something you couldn't see, but it was kind of compromised underneath. And it just kind of worked its way up. I don't know what the break looked like, but seems like a pretty big coincidence because you don't hear that too often.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, the guy said this is the first time we've seen this happen. Said a guy whose previous job was like building for the tour. He was like on tour in one of those trucks, and then he now works at Club Champion. So he said you have two options. One, you can take the head you're going to purchase from the new Titleist, the TSR3, and we can put a new shaft in. Two, what we can do is, because it broke at the very, very end of the shaft, I can saw this off, clean it up, stick it back in. You're going to lose about an inch in the shaft, put an extender at the end of your club, and you can try it out for 2 weeks. And the time that the new head gets sent to us, if it works, we'll pop the new head on the old shaft. That's it. If you don't like it, if it feels crazy, we'll sell you a new shaft too. So I'm like, all right, let's Frankenstein the old club. I'll play it for the next 2 to 3 weeks and see how I feel. And he's like, okay, so here's the deal. This is the fitter saying this. You might not notice any difference. It might play exactly the same. Or it might feel like you are swinging the stiffest shaft you've ever played with in your life, and you're going to hit it terribly, and you'll probably know pretty quickly. I'm like, cool. Okay. So I didn't try it at Club Champion because they had to, you know, everything had to dry, it wasn't ready. Took it to the old range yesterday. I hit the driver so poorly that it was almost indescribable. And I actually had a good session warming up and like hitting balls. And then I hit a couple of drivers and they just ballooned like even more than my usual poof ball miss. Like this thing was like almost boomeranging back at me. I managed to figure out how to hit it a little bit towards the end. And the last one I actually hit was the best one I caught. I caught it right in the middle. I just don't know. I'm playing around on Saturday.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm just gonna stop you right there.
Go ahead.
You're gonna need to get the shaft because when you trim a shaft, like everything is not equal. Like trimming an inch from the tip section does a lot different things than adding an inch to the butt. It changes the flex. It changes basically the stiffness. Like Romy said, like where it loads, how it feels. I wouldn't try to like make it work because you're just going to undo all the gains you get from the technology that's in the club head if the shaft is working against you. If it didn't work at the range, there's no point in trying to make it fit because you're just going to, like you said, oh, I kind of learned how to do it. Like you're already saying, you're already like changing your swing to hit this shaft that doesn't fit when you just went to this fitting, are buying a brand new driver head. Like you just, in my opinion, need to bite the bullet and get the proper shaft that's not compromised and just make it all work as one package and keep it for another 15 years if you need to. But you don't want to try to like adjust your swing to accommodate for a broken shaft with like all of this technology and a club head that you're not taking advantage of.
That's kind of what I settled on even before I went to the range. It's like, it'd be sort of weird to like stick this shaft that already broke once. It would be like, you know, putting an old car engine in a brand new car, like a new model, right? It's like, why would I try to do that? Just get the new engine, get everything around it that's brand new, especially since I've made the effort. There's already sunk costs into this thing, right? So it's like, just bite the bullet, get everything brand new, make it exactly how you want, and you're going to feel good about it. And I do feel really good setting up to the golf ball, like even just the slightly smaller head, because you're so used to seeing this massive driver head. It's tough to describe, but it made me feel kind of the conversation that we had. I didn't get a mini driver. I didn't get anything with necessarily a lower profile, but the slightly smaller driver head makes me feel like I'm going to be able to work the ball, which is what I want to do. I want to be able to hit it left to right and right to left, and I think I'm going to be able to do that with this club. So it's a pretty exciting outcome. I know you have some questions for me, but I do want to share one thought before we get to that. Because I had used a club off the rack for, let's say, almost four seasons now. I bought it in 2020. And I ended up with a newer version of what I already have. I was trying to articulate this in the group chat with you and Romy, but it's difficult not to think that I have grooved my driver swing to match the club that I've had. And because my swing is grooved for this club, all the data pointed to a newer version of what I already had. Instead of having a swing that is going to be maximized with whatever club is best for me, right? So like, let's say the ping in a vacuum was the best club for me, and I got that in my hand in 2020. I don't really know that I'm getting the best club for my swing in totality. I'm getting the best club for my swing right now. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I for some reason, I thought you were fit for your driver when you got it, but you got it off the rack. Okay.
So I went to Golf Galaxy. I hit a few balls. They adjusted it, but it was really like a 20-minute kind of thing, you know?
It wasn't like a, okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could be right, but that still makes it the right decision because you're not
sure
that your swing, whether it's built because, you know, all of these golf lessons you're taking taught you that swing, or because like you just kind of adapted to the clubs you were hitting, gave you that swing. That it doesn't matter how you got there. That's your swing. So you're playing the best club for that swing. Makes sense that the title is there. You have some familiarity with it. It's not a surprise. Like Romy was texting me on the side, like, you know, no surprise. He went with the club that he's familiar with, that he's played well. It's not like you got a new driver because you couldn't hit it and you hated your driver. You know,
that's
if that
true.
Were the case, you probably would have gone something opposite of Titleist.
Look, folks, so I won the long drive at the Corner Club Open last year. It's not like it wasn't broken, folks. I mean, it literally was broken, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it makes sense. You did it right, basically. That's what I would say.
Well, I appreciate that. I know I'm putting the club in my bag that I'm going to have a lot of confidence with. Like, when we are done here, I'm literally going to email the guy and just say, how much does the shaft cost? And just let's just do this, because I just want a brand new driver. And to put a new head on an old shaft, you're right. I would be probably trying to swing too hard, because the shaft is stiffer now. And I wouldn't be feeling comfortable over the ball, which is a terrible place to be after making this sort of investment into your driver.
And you don't want to hit a bad shot and be like,
that's right.
Oh, was that just a bad shot? Or was it because this driver, like the shaft is Frankenstein together. Like, at least if you're going to hit bad shots.
That's in my head.
But at least you're going to know, like, okay, it's not the driver's fault. Yeah. Like, I'm still playing the best driver, because you don't want to be second guessing that.
No, you're right.
You did proclaim at the end of this whole conversation. So, by the way, I was like at the park with my kids, and I was just like wanting to engage in this conversation, but like Gavin is climbing up this massive like slide and Sydney's yeah. running off, you know, and I'm like, I should probably watch my kids.
Smart move.
But you declared that you are now a gearhead. So I want to dig into that a little bit.
Okay.
What is the TrackMan data point, like the one number that you saw that stuck with you the most, like, oh my god, like I didn't know this about my swing. Is there something that you like are still thinking about?
Yeah, I think I always assumed that my spin rate was goofy because I hit the ball so high, and like they would be able to make some sort of equipment adjustment to allow for that. And the guy pretty quickly dispelled that rumor and said, no, your spin rate is absolutely fine. Like, it's nothing to do with your spin. I like what's happening here. It's purely your angle of attack. So I'm hitting up on the ball like crazy with my driver and not any other club. So I hit probably like a half dozen five woods, and he's like, don't ever get rid of that club. Like, you hit that thing great. Like, my angle of attack was awesome. My smash factor was like 1.48, and I know what that means now, so that's pretty good. And the driver, he's like, you hit a 10 and a half degree driver, basically, because the loft was increased on the driver that I'm using on 9.5. I guess it'd be 10.25 technically. And he's like, you're adding 8 degrees of loft every driver swing. So essentially you are hitting the ball at 19 degrees. So you're hitting it straight up in the air, but your swing speed and your contact on the ball is so good that it makes up for that. So essentially you have to fix your angle of attack and hit more down on the ball. And like,
really? I assumed that you were hitting too far down on it, and because you're supposed to hit like 3 to 5 degrees up is like the ideal. So you're hitting so far up, it's putting this dynamic loft on the club. That's interesting. I was thinking it was the other way around.
Yeah, I found it to be interesting too, because then just kind of my own curiosity, you know, I tend to play a big banana ball famously, and you know, I would say 1 out of every 3 tries when I do it, play, you know, a pretty normal draw. Like, I wouldn't even call it a hook. It's like probably a 10-yard draw, and the ball flies lower. And I was curious about my angle attack on those. And even on those, I'm hitting up in the ball at almost the same rate. It's just that I'm drawing the ball so it goes a little bit farther. So it's purely swing mechanics. It has nothing to do with technology. And it all has to do with angle of attack. But it's just so interesting because I'm only doing that with the driver. Like, I hit some 3 irons off the deck and my angle of attack was 0 or even negative. So it's only the driver. So yeah, I'm more of a basket case than I thought. My driver swing is completely different than my swing with other clubs.
Well, and that's how it's supposed to be.
Well, to an extent, the degree to which mine is different is literally too much. So it's a really interesting factoid. And you know, some of it could do with ball position. I play the ball very far forward with my driver, sometimes even in front of my left foot, but I do that to promote a cut, so I have a reliable shot shape. So working on some of that stuff, not as we get into tournament season, but maybe in the off season, is going to be useful information. Like, at the very least, I do have these data points that are going to be useful moving forward, and things I can look for and say, okay, this is what's happening with the driver. This is why it's happening with the driver. I kind of know how to correct it. Do I want to take the steps to overhaul my swing, or do I just want to play with what I have?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. My other question, my only other one, you said you're going to be building clubs in your garage now. I know that was tongue in cheek, but yes. It did this open your eyes to any tinkering? Is there any tinkering you're like, man, if I just do this to these clubs, like, is there anything you're tempted to do or no?
I will say my intimidation about tinkering is now completely gone. As a matter of fact, when I went to the range, I actually took out the tool for the first time. I knew where it was in my trunk. It was buried in my trunk, and I actually changed it. I changed the loft on this Frankenstein driver that I have to see what it was like. And again, because I'm using such a different club now in terms of the shaft, I don't know how much of an effect there really was, but it was interesting to see how the club set up differently when I had different loft on it. So it's 9.5 degrees stock, and the setting coming out of Golf Galaxy was a slight draw bias with 0.75 up on the loft. So essentially I've been playing a 10.25 degree driver with a draw bias. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to the range. Let's just play around. So I dropped it down all the way to, I guess that would have been 8.75 degrees of loft. So I went from 2.105 to 8.75, same draw bias. And like I said, I hit one or two on the nose. I didn't really notice a difference in ball flight. And again, I think because I'm using such a weird shaft, it's probably misleading anyway. But I think my intimidation with tinkering is less than it was prior to this experience, which I think makes it very valuable.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, good job, Joe. You went in. I think the most important thing is you went in open-minded. You know, you tried some different brands. You swung with the fitter put in your hand. You came to the conclusion that your old club was the best, but you got there organically. And I think you did a great job.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, swing speed was one thing that I found to be interesting because I guess I kind of like lost track of what normal swing speed should be. And I was like 100 with my driver. And I'm like, is that like a senior speed? What does 100 miles an hour actually mean? And then I quickly got back in the car and I Googled like average swing speed for a 38-year-old. And it looks like what I loosely saw was if you're between 30 and 50 years old, 103 miles an hour is the average swing with a driver. So I'm 38, so I'm kind of in the middle of that. So it looks like I'm right at an average swing speed for a driver, for someone my age, which I feel fine about.
Let me just tell you this. You, for swinging at that speed and hitting it as far as you hit, you are completely optimizing the club. I think you have like probably 25 yards to gain if you do like super speed, like swing training, like speed training. If you do the stack system or super speed or any of those for like 4 to 6 weeks, Joe, if you're hitting it like, I don't know, close to 300 or that neighborhood on a few times around, you should, my best advice to you would be spend 4 weeks and like $100, get super speed, just do it. It's like 3 days a week for 10 minutes. You will probably gain 20 yards.
I really appreciate you thinking that I'm that open-minded.
It's so easy.
I mean, to be honest, a lot of it is what me and Romy talked about on here when you were doing your move is, you know, training and practicing while middle-aged. I felt the driver stuff the next day, man. My entire right hamstring, and I do yoga 3 times a week. Like, I work out almost every day. I do a lot of physical stuff to, like, make sure my body is in good shape because I've had a lot of surgeries. You know, I've had a lot of medical issues in the past from a physiological standpoint, and that just sounds like it's going to be crazy wear and tear of my body to gain 20 yards. Is it not? Tell me.
No, it's literally, so I haven't done the stack system. The stack is like the Mercedes-Benz of speed training. If you don't have a budget, like, get the stack. If you do have a budget, get super speed. It's like $100-$150. It's like 10 minutes a day, 3 days a week. And you just swing these sticks. You do it left and right handed because some, it like neurologically trains you, whatever it is. Like there's science behind it. I don't really know the science, but you just do it and you gain yards. It's super easy. It's a little bit of a workout, but it's not like going to wear and tear your body. Definitely not.
Are you going to do one of these? I mean, are you going to be smashing it past me in Rome's at the Corner Club Open? You've got 3 months to put it into practice.
I'm doing some, I'm actually testing a couple training aids.
Hell yeah.
I'm working with one right now that's supposed to train speed. So I got my baseline numbers. I haven't checked in on the progress. And once that's done, I think I'll be doing some stuff with super speed as well. So yeah, I'm for sure. Why you would, it's free yards basically. For it's a little bit of effort, like for the rollback to pass all those people who are bitching about the ball, like you can just go right past them. It's free yards for a little bit of work.
All right, what's the cheap one again? Maybe I'll do this. What is it called?
Super speed. There's knockoffs of super speed.
Give me the Kia. Yeah, that's super speed. I don't want the Mercedes.
Super speed is the brand name. of the cheap version. I've got a cheap version of that, which is like, I don't even know what it is. I got it off Amazon, but it's yeah.
Okay. How long do you think I make it before I just stop doing this?
It's easy. It's Joe, it's 3 days a week for 10 minutes. I think you can do it.
Is this one of those sticks that you buy?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's three sticks.
My dad had one of these sticks. Vijay Singh hawked one of these years ago. My dad probably has it in his garage.
Right. No, don't buy anything right now. I'll send you a picture of what I got. I'll send you the Amazon link. You can sleep on it, but I'm just telling you with how efficiently you hit your driver, this, you will guarantee gain speed. You will guarantee gain yards, and it would just be silly not to.
I mean, I tell you what, old Patty Harrington, Patty Ice popped up on my screen, and my guy mashes for a 55-year-old. So if anyone's going to sell me on like approaching middle age and adding distance, it's that three-time goofball, three-time major winner. Yeah. Okay. All right. Send me some literature and then we'll talk about it sometime soon. Let's not do the would you rather. Let's save that. And we might have done that before. Let me know off the pod. I do want to take this on because there is this thing on golf social media where like – people will slow-mo taking a large divot with a wedge or have like divot contests. And there is this narrative that it is really cool or impressive to take a large divot when executing like a lob wedge or a sand wedge or something like that. And I don't really understand where that came from, where it is chic or cool or impressive or something that needs to be chronicled on a video and put on social media for people to enjoy. First of all, do you see what I'm talking about? Do you see the divot taking videos out there? Are you completely removed and don't understand what I'm talking about?
That's not in my algorithm. And my algorithm is golf stuff, but it's not divots. I think they know, Instagram and Facebook know that I'm too sensitive because all my divots are on the wrong side of the ball. That would probably just break my heart.
It's triggering.
These apps. Yes, I would say, okay, I can't look at Instagram anymore. No, I haven't seen that.
Even though you haven't seen that, do you understand the concept where taking a big divot seems like a cool thing? It's okay if you don't. You don't have to lie.
I mean, I think it's just like Tim Duncan highlights, right? Like it's just what you're supposed to do. It's just foundation, you know, it's good fundamentals. I think it's cool to, you know, be able to make a layup right-handed and left-handed. Like, yeah, you if you're taking a proper divot, you should feel good that your golf game is in a spot where you know you're going to consistently hit the low point of your swing in the right spot. Like that's a fundamental skill of golf that anybody would probably buy. So if you're doing it, I guess post it on Instagram. I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's cool. Look, I my divots are not nearly consistent or good enough to put on Instagram. I'll tell you that.
Is your phone near you right now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I guarantee you just by us talking about this, these are going to start to pop up on your phone. And I can't wait for you to just be like up with Sydney at some ungodly hour and looking at your phone, waiting for her to get back to sleep. And you just see divots everywhere. And you go, oh, shit, Joe was right. This is amazing. just to close this thought, and it's a conversation that's going to continue.
Do you think it's great or do you have a problem with it?
It's not that I don't have a problem with it. I just don't understand that it's some sort of marker that you're a good golfer. It's an impressive feat. Like someone hitting a flop shot backwards, incredible. Someone making a left-handed swing when they're a right-handed golfer to save par, so cool. Someone hitting the bottom of the earth and not knowing the result of the golf ball, that's not impressive. I can stick a wedge in the ground with anybody else and take a big pelt of turf and maybe the ball gets close to the hole. I don't really understand why it's like an indicator of great golf skill that is associated with it. If you're a picker of the golf ball and you hit the ball close to the hole, who gives a shit how much of the ground you're hitting? As a matter of fact, it's better for the golf course if you don't take massive divots. Yes, you can replace them. Yes, you can put the seed back. But it's not as though you are an impressive golfer because you take a massive divot with a sand wedge compared to someone who picks it if you both hit it 10 feet from the hole. I don't really understand the importance or gravitas of it.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I think from a standpoint of, probably good for the kids to be like, ooh, I'm gonna like if they're having like divot competitions, I think that's probably good for their game. Like they're probably gonna learn some good fundamentals. Like they're probably gonna become good ball strikers if they're really focused on where their divot is. So that's cool. I wish I would have been exposed to this and I was learning golf, I'd probably save myself a lot of headache.
Let me just close it up with one question. Have you ever been playing with someone and you've seen them take an enormous divot and thought, oh, that was pretty goddamn cool?
No,
of course not.
Never.
Anyway, now that you've listened to this podcast, folks, now that you're near your phone, Nick, we're going to see divot videos come up on your algorithm. I just want you to send them to me or just say, hey, I saw some divot videos today. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, well, I have my iPhone set to not listen to me. So we'll see if this will be the test.
Did you contact Tim Cook? Apple. How did you do that?
There's a setting. There's a setting where you can basically
ask not to track. Is that what you're talking about?
Ask Siri not to listen for Hey Siri, or ask it not to listen for Hey Siri. Then it will turn off the.
Oh my God! Text me about
listening
that.
Ears. Yeah.
Lacey's ready to snap her phone in half if Siri one time interrupts her one more time if she's talking to me or someone else. Okay, let's move on to the Mad Golfer of the Week. We're going to site of this week's Players Championship, TPC Sawgrass. We're getting into the real golf season now, Nick. Can I guess how many?
I have a tee time set for Sunday at Palouse Ridge with Romy and Martinik.
Oh my
Sorry
God.
To interject with this news, but yeah.
What time are you going?
10:04.
I'm going to check flights.
Yes.
Let's get back to not the Palouse, but TPC Sawgrass. We're going to... Oh boy, Jeffrey Martin. I forgot what I put in here. This one's hilarious. Quote, sorry, I'm not trying to be a contrarian. I love the Players, and this is a phenomenal course layout, though admittedly aided by the fact that this course hosts a PGA event and that you've seen it on TV. But if I'm being objective and comparing it to other courses in Florida where they play PGA events and that I've also played, I'm pretty disappointed about our round this week based on the cost versus the course conditions, specifically the greens. Greens were ridiculously slow. I'm not expecting 13 on the meter for public play, but these weren't even a 10. Balls were stopping on downhill putts very quickly. I honestly don't think anyone was long on a single putt in our foursome. Okay, can I pause? We're halfway through. Great brag so far, talking about that he wants fast greens and that he's played a bunch of PGA courses in Florida. Two, the implication that slow greens are really, really bad because you only play fast greens and there's also like some sort of bleed over that good players can only play on fast greens. Third, you're not good because if you didn't have a single putt past the hole in 18 holes of golf, none of you adjusted at any point for the greens, you're not very good at golf.
Right. By the fourth hole, that excuse is played out. And he built the perfect opening for,
yeah,
and I'm a 2 handicap and somehow resisted putting that in there. So if there's any props to be given to Jeff Martin, that's it.
Well, let's see if he gets there. Going back to Jeff, quote, they were also burned out pretty bad around the edges and also some random spots in the middle of the green. For $400 to $600, this should not be the case. Compared to PGA National, Bay Hill or Copperhead, not even close to the same green conditions. And all those are less expensive to play. And then if you compare to some place like Streamsong, forget about it. So in short, for the conditions today, I would never pay anywhere close to what they're charging. If you're going to charge more than Pebble or Pinehurst, do better. And if you remember, this was a couple years ago, and we did, I think, an episode right after the Players last year, maybe over the summer, where there's some tee times at Sawgrass that are pushing $1,000 now. So I understand being overly critical of a golf course if you're going to pay that much. But what do you really expect for $1,000? Like, what conditions could you find on a golf course and you'd pay that much money that you'd feel okay about?
Yeah, there's no course conditions where you'd be like, yeah, this was worth $1,000. Like, it's just not, you're going to see one thing out of place and be like, damn it, I paid $1,000 for this. And it sounds like Jeff did not pay, or he got like a significantly reduced rate. Like, either he knows somebody, or like his place of employment, like he won this trip or something. Like, he definitely did not pay because he keeps like quoting these numbers. Like, if he was really pissed off, he would say like, I paid $568 for this tee time. Not like, for $400 to $600, like, those courses charge more than this course, I wouldn't pay this much. It's like, okay, well, like, did you get on for free? Like, what did you actually pay?
Some people pay $400 to $600. Yeah. Congrats, Jeffrey Martin. You are our Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is time for Nick Rules, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
I feel like I'm always going back to Rule 8.1a, and for some reason, these guys on the PGA Tour cannot seem to figure it out. So I'm just going to reiterate it one more time. You may not take any actions if they improve the conditions affecting your stroke. This includes, Joe, move, bend, or break any growing or attached natural object or altering the surface of the ground. And of course, it's the general penalty if you break this rule. It's two strokes. Yet, time and time again, I do. This is in my algorithm. The cheaters out there.
Who was it? Was it Wyndham Clark?
It was Wyndham.
Yeah.
Wyndham was all over social on Saturday night for pulling some Patrick Reed moves, to be honest. I think he was probably in violation of rule 8.1A right here.
Not great. Not great. Wyndham, do better. You're a U.S. Open champion. You're carrying the American flag around for a few more months. Come on, buddy. Let's
not
do
a great
a
weekend
better.
For him. I also saw videos of him smashing his club into the ground. Huge divots. not from shots.
Yeah.
Talking about reducing the size of fields to 100 guys. He's taking a lot of heat. Not a good week to be Wyndham.
You know, it's funny because from a public relations standpoint, not a great week, but he finished solo second at the Arnold Palmer over the weekend. So he probably cashed like $2 million. So not the worst weekend in the world. Good for his bank account. Not good for his publicist.
Would you take a $2 million paycheck and just like...
Don't even have to finish that sentence.
You're just the devil of... Yeah, for like a week, you're the villain on the PGA Tour. Maybe even a season. Who cares?
Yeah, no. If I was the current U.S. Open champion and people thought I improved my life, I would just give you the double bird and say, I don't give a shit. I won the U.S. Open. I just won $2 million for finishing runner-up to Scotty. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is.
That's the answer.
Nick rules! You know what? I'm trying to decide my ratio of happy to jealous for you guys that you're playing Palouse Ridge this weekend. I'm going to say I'm like 85% happy and 15% jealous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as I know, it's only a threesome. So, I mean, there is a flight that gets into Pullman at like 6 a.m. I mean, it's, I don't know what you're doing this weekend. I don't think it's pickle season yet, Joe. So I'm just saying.
I actually, you want to know what I'm really doing this Sunday?
Yeah.
I'm running 15K.
No. No.
That I have been training for. So yeah, I have to do it. I've already paid for it and everything else. Yeah. But look, I hope you guys have a great time. Watch Romy. Make sure he doesn't improve his lie at any point during the round. Romy, we're in posting
I'll check those
season.
Burrowing animal holes. I'm sure Romy and Marduk will be like strategizing for the Cornhole Open, and I'll just be out there in my own cart by myself, drinking my lemonade.
Martinik will have a black and mild in his mouth, just enjoying some free time, and you're going to be stressing out by yourself in the corner. Oh,
yeah.
June can't get here soon enough. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Club Champion for setting me straight, giving me some help. I'm excited for the golf season ahead. Nick, we're just about a month away. Can I get your early Masters predictions?
I mean, it's Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah,
sorry for the recency bias, but guy looks pretty good.
Good luck betting against Scottie Scheffler in the Masters and feeling good about it. Yeah. Thank you again for listening. Please rate and review the show. One more thing. Big at the turn. Congrats to Coach Ashley back with Vandal Soccer. Was so excited to see that post. Nick, things must be a buzz in your household right now.
She's back. Yeah, we're taking the kids to all the Vandal sporting events. And Gavin, he loves to throw the V now. It's so cute. Because we took like two basketball games. By the second one, he's like, come on, Vandals. Like, he doesn't really know what he's saying. And now he's like throwing the Vs. We took him to a tennis match yesterday, and he's like throwing the Vs. It's the best.
I'm sure it's great for little kids. Sanctioned yelling at the top of your lungs. It's absolutely perfect. Well, just if Ashley needs me to guest public address for the Vandals women's soccer team, let me know. That was one of my most embarrassing gigs I've ever had. I don't know if you recall the game that I had against Hawaii where I couldn't pronounce any of those girls' names, and it was like 10 a.m. and I was hungover and they were screaming at me. Not worth the $25, but I'm very, very happy that Ashley is back with the Vandal women's soccer team. Congrats to her. Congrats to all of you. Golf season is here. Appreciate your support of the show.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn.